Ms. Jeffcoat Sacco?
Yes, Your Honor. I need to disclose on the record a conflict of interest on my part for a portion of my role in advising the commission, and I have to recuse myself from advising the commission on the transmission issue, if it's acceptable to the parties that I can continue to advise them on the other portions of this settlement or this case. I have been appointed advocacy staff in a different case that concerns advanced determination of prudence for transmission, and the advocacy staff has taken a position on the propriety of prudence for transmission, where the costs are initially recovered through a FERC tariff and then that is applied back to the states. I thought that perhaps there was a witness here who could, if this was a true fact, who could distinguish factually for everyone that this transmission line in this case is different from the transmission line in the other cases. Those are the CapEx cases. And even though there may be some distinctions, there is no one who can testify to that today and in sufficient detail that it would avoid a conflict on my part. So my mission at this point is to disclose the conflict on the transmission portion of the settlement agreement, and it would apply to all four cases, basically. I am willing to continue to advise the commission on the rest of it if the parties have no objection. There is another staff advisor to the commission, and that's Pat Fawn, who I neglected to introduce earlier, the Director of Compliance and Competitive Markets, but I do need to disclose this conflict that I did not realize until this hearing was existing, based on recently filed staff testimony in those other cases.
Well, on the basis of Ms. Jeffcoat Sacco's statement, Mr. Brigg, do you have any, does Otter Tail Power have any objection to her proposal?
No, we do not have any objection to her continuing to serve in that capacity with respect to the generation.
Mr. Samico.
No objection, Your Honor.
Mr. Broughton.
No objection, Your Honor.
And I suppose Commission Advocacy Staff, Ms. Bendish.
I have no objection, Your Honor.
All right. For the record, then, the disclosure made by Ms. Jeffcoat Sacco and the lack of objection by the parties is noted. Anything further, Mr. Bring?
Your Honor, we have no further witnesses or presentations save for the closing statement I intend to make later.
Yes. Mr. Savico, does the large, I forgot now. Large industrial group have any evidence?
We have no evidence. We'll make a brief closing statement.
Mr. Broughton, does Dakota Resource Council have any evidence to offer?
We have no evidence, and I'd also like to make a brief closing statement.
Ms. Bendish?
I would call Mike Diller.
Mr. Diller, as you are well aware, your testimony is required to be under oath, and I'm required by law to advise you regarding perjury before administering the oath. Perjury is a false statement of material fact which you do not believe to be true. In North Dakota, perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a fine up to $5,000, imprisonment for a period of up to 5 years or more. Will you raise your right hand, please? Being advised regarding perjury, Mr. Diller, do you swear that the testimony which you're about to give in this matter shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Ms. Bendish.
Mr. Diller, can you please state your name and your position of employment?
My name is Mike Diller. Mike spelled M-I-K-E Diller, D-I-L-L-E-R. my position with the commission is Director of Economic Regulation.
And in your position, what are your primary responsibilities?
Primarily, I'm a manager of the rate cases that come before the commission. Also, a lot of ADP applications in the last year or two, and ADP applications of significant value and cost. And so I would say that's taken up a lot of my time.
For whom are you testifying today?
I'm testifying on behalf of the ratepayers of Otter Tail Power Company.
And I have given you what's been marked as PSC Exhibit 1. Can you identify that, please?
That is my pre-filed direct testimony.
And what was the purpose of your pre-filed direct testimony?
I wanted to just provide the commission with some information before we got here so that they understood what staff's rationale was for settling, and just to give some background information. I assume that they appreciate having it early, and that was my purpose.
I would offer Exhibit 1.
Mr. Bring?
No objection.
Mr. Sabico?
None, Your Honor.
Mr. Brett?
No objection.
Exhibit PSC 1 is received.
Before I offer you for cross-examination, you were present previously when Ms. Jeff Kotsacko asked a question about the numbers underlying, or the background information for the numbers that we have used in the settlement agreement. Can you provide the commission with any testimony about your investigation and any background information you would have as to those numbers?
Sure. Now, when I listened to Alana, she really kind of hit on something that I struggled a little bit during the review. It's not quite like a rate case, as Alana was describing it. You start with, let's just use numbers, $100 million, and then North Dakota shares 40%, so it's $40 million, and then the customer classes are allocated a share, and so it just flows real nice. The percent ownership changed throughout the process, and so you can't just start with $100 million. The information almost flows back up, so to speak. And so I don't have a nice schedule like that now. To your question of what I did review, one thing I did was I reviewed all the costs incurred during 1 month of the project. I just picked 1 month randomly to look through all the details of that month. I also spent a lot of time looking at the costs incurred by outside vendors. I think my direct testimony refers to about $30 million worth of outside vendor costs. And with respect to, I guess, one more thing as far as costs go, with respect to internal costs and whether they were included in the 2007 test year rate case, the way accounting works, the way project accounting works, the way FERC accounting works, is if you incur, Mark Bring was used as an example. If Mark Bring spends time on a project, it's recorded to that project, it gets capitalized, set aside for recovery someday or not. And so any time that was spent on this project by anyone in the company, it's just a natural process, a natural way of accounting for things, that those costs cannot find their way into a rate case.
I have no further questions. I would offer Mr. Diller for cross-examination.
Mr. Bring?
If I may have a moment, Your Honor.
You may.
I have no questions, Your Honor.
Mr. Sabico?
I had a question about the FERC accounting. And you partially answered it before I got to ask it. So for Otter Tail employees, this was one of the concerns, the redundant charges that we potentially faced, and something we talked about with advocacy staff as well. For FERC accounting purposes, an employee, if they put 6 hours in one day on the project and 2 hours in on ordinary Otter Tail regulated rate issues, the hours for that day would be put into a journal entry or allocated to the special project as a matter of course.
Matter of of accounting, yes.
Okay. I've got no further questions. Thank you.
Mr. Bratton.
Just to follow up on that, how is that time then valued? If, for example, the employee is on a salary and they put in 6 hours, are you taking a percentage of salary? Are you billing hourly? What kind of a value to put on the time when it's recorded that way?
Well, there's loading rates involved. It's not just if they make $50 an hour, it's not just $50 an hour. It would be $50 an hour for 6 hours, and then there would be loading rates that would apply to that as well.
A couple other questions. You said you picked a month at random and reviewed the cost from that month of the project. Can you give me an idea of what you were looking at specifically?
Right. Well, it's basically, for the most part, every entry for that month. And so what I saw in there were details as small as meals of company representatives that had to travel to Big Stone City or Big Stone 2. And so it's all levels.
So my question is, though, if you're looking at that month and you're looking at meals, for example, do you then go and look at receipts to see that there's documentation backing up the number placed on that accounting?
No, I don't go that far. We have three people on staff, and we can't afford to do that kind of thing. It's kind of like the question is, how do you know Otter Tail Power's employees really spent 6 hours on the project? You can't prove that. I can't stand over their shoulder and watch them to make sure they spent 6 hours on the project. There is always some degree of trust in the organization and accounting methods and procedures.
Can you explain then, what is it you're looking for? Are you looking at this 1 month period? Are you looking for aberrations, for things that just, at first blush don't look reasonable? What kind of things are you actually looking at then?
Sure. Well, some of the things you look for is, I have the vendor list, the big vendor list. So if there's a big expenditure by a vendor, I want to see that their name shows up on my vendors over $25,000. Basically, you just use an eye of skepticism and try to look at costs to see whether or not they appear reasonable.
And I certainly understand that you don't have the time to go looking at every lunch receipt that they spend, but for some of the large expenditures from outside vendors, for example, if they were, $20,000, $100,000, right. Did you look at invoices, receipts, or anything like that for any of those?
I did not. That was actually a goal of mine when I left the building and traveled to Fergus Falls for a couple of days. But once I got there, I decided that it was more important to look, start with a more global perspective and to focus on the outside vendors and what they were retained for and how much was, how much of a cost was incurred. And I have to admit that over the 25 years of regulatory auditing I've done, seldom does it pay to look at invoices. And in fact, I can't remember that it's ever paid. And generally speaking, there's so many entities that review companies' expenditures and these applications and things that you would just never create some fictitious amount. You would pay a tremendous price across the board, starting with the IRS and working your way down. So my answer is no, I did not look at any specific invoices.
I'm going to refer now to the PSC Exhibit 1, page 7, which is your testimony. Just a couple questions on that first full paragraph there. You're discussing the transmission lines, the transmission facilities, and you say that they're inseparable from the Big Stone project. And had there been similar proportional proceeding in North Dakota for transmission facilities, staff would argue for a direct allocation of these costs to Minnesota. Did you look into, or did anyone on staff, advocacy staff, look into the legal basis? If you're going, you say staff would argue. Do you have a legal basis to argue that? Do you know why you would argue that? Did you run that by Otter Tail?
I didn't look into a legal basis. It was more just from a common sense standpoint, I guess, if you will. If we had a similar procedure in North Dakota, a similar process in North Dakota, it was comparable to that one. And our cost was $100,000, and Minnesota's was $3 million, then I think there's some basis there for allocating costs directly. We don't have that here. It was a struggle of mine to get over the cost that was incurred in the Minnesota Certificate of Need process, but I just didn't feel like we had a strong enough foundation to go that direction.
No further questions.
Ms. Jeff Kotzacko.
No questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Sure. And Mike, now as advocacy staff, your job is to advocate for the public interest, correct?
That's correct.
So in any settlement negotiation, each party is giving something. And you refer, I think, a bit to it in your testimony, but if you could just also provide as well on the record here today what you think you were able to get on behalf of the public interest that encouraged you to go for a settlement as opposed to just having a hearing and letting the commission decide.
It probably took half my time just trying to figure out what direction I was going to go on this case. It was difficult. It's fairly new law. This is really kind of a first hearing today in a case where an ADP application doesn't go forward. The bottom line for me was that perhaps I could throw up enough dirt in the air to convince the commission that you shouldn't decide today. You shouldn't decide in the days ahead that this was that it was prudent to stop. Suppose I could do that. I was not convinced myself that we could win in court, and so I'm always trying to manage our workload. I don't want to chase rabbits that I have no reasonable hope of getting. And so my
thought.
You're
not suggesting that you can fool commissioners but not judges? Is that the?
I wouldn't suggest that. I'm just saying if I was lucky enough to convince the judge and the commissioners in this case, and then let's say the Supreme Court looked at it. What's the question?
The question is, what'd you get for consumers?
Okay. I don't know if I put it in my testimony. I don't recall at this point, but I see it right there in terms of present value. There, by putting off the cost recovery for 3 years without a cost of capital component, the ratepayers on a time value of money will benefit to the tune of about 12%. Basically, you see my testimony there. I argued for more, and I did settle on 3 years, and I settled on 3 years because I thought it was the best that the ratepayers and staff could hope for in consideration of all the things that have already been talked about today.
Okay, and the I don't think it's quantified in your testimony, but if I recall right from Mr. Brouse's testimony, he he put the value of that at $529,000. Is that
I don't have accurate? That calculation okay. in front of me. I do have it on Excel spreadsheet.
Okay. I assume when he was talking about the carrying costs that are foregone, it was in reference to the time value of money over the three-year amortization.
That sounds about right.
Okay. Thanks.
Any further questions from the commission? Commissioner Cobb?
Whatever.
Well, I... Commissioner Cobb, you nodded your head first.
It is his portfolio, so he's...
Thanks for your testimony, Mike. Your answer to Commissioner Clark's question about, you know, you felt that this might not withstand the scrutiny of a higher court, if you will. So do you say that the law currently favors a corporation more so than it does the consumers, the current law? I mean, that's the extension that I would have taken out of your comments.
Hmm. Well, my answer was fairly narrow. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why I thought this was a fair settlement, but it was just focused on you know, the monetary value and the ADP law. But I have a whole list of reasons why I think this was a reasonable settlement. Is that what you're?
Well, just kind of I talked about the law earlier, and as well as other commissioners about how. You know, not today, but in the future sessions, that the law may need to have some adjustments to it for this type of scenario that gives the commission more ability to protect the ratepayer from these kind of things.
It's a very, I think crafting a different law or better law would be difficult. I'm not saying that it couldn't be achieved. I don't have the answer today for you. I would just say this, that if you believe that large projects cost less because of the ADP process, then when they're successful, that's easy. I guess it's working. When it's not, even in this case, I would argue that today, while it's a hard pill to swallow, it's very difficult to explain to ratepayers and the average person on the street that you spent what and you didn't build anything. I mean, I understand that, but think about it, maybe think about it in terms of if you said build it anyway, and they had some way of building it anyway, even though they don't have the partners, you're looking at spending $550 million on something that, for all we can tell right now, for all practical purposes, would not be prudent. We're talking about, in this case, Otter Tail spending total was, what, $12.7 million, or 2% of what they would be spending if they continued on without additional partners, that $550 million that Mr. Brous has already testified to. It is a lot of money, and it is hard to explain. I'd argue that maybe the law has worked here, that it isn't prudent, and we shouldn't tell them to build it anyway. And let's cut our losses before it gets any worse.
Okay. The follow-up question, Mike, is the talked about how the North Dakota share is 40% of the overall cost. Do you think there's any areas, such as you know the legal area, that maybe the other ratepayers outside of North Dakota ratepayers should pay a larger percentage of that? Did you look at that at all, or what would your thoughts be on that? I talked to a previous person testifying to answer that a little bit.
All right. Well, I talked to that a little bit already. Let me give you an example. For instance, let's say the communications consultant, we spent, let's say, $100 on in North Dakota, and the communication consultant in Minnesota, we spent $300. Why shouldn't those costs be allocated $100 to North Dakota and $300 to Minnesota? Is that
a
good?
That's the basis of the question.
That's a good, okay, good analysis. Those kinds of questions are difficult, but in this case, most of the focus was not in our state. None of the focus really was in our state. And so how do you allocate all the costs to all the jurisdictions? And that's why I was talking about that. If we had a similar proceeding in North Dakota, a similar one in Minnesota, maybe I could make that argument. I'm not even sure I'd win making that argument, but at least you'd have a chance of making the argument. But I decided along the way, Commissioner, that it was just better to keep all the costs together and allocate them the way they did. It would have been quite a nightmare to untangle 6-7 years worth of costs and try to reallocate based on direct jurisdictional types of costs.
Okay. Do you think that it would be equally as hard for the company to prove if the commission decided that they pay a higher percentage? I mean, if it's hard for you to prove it, it would seem it would be just as hard for them to prove it coming back.
I'm sorry, I was...
Maybe that's more speculative. We'll talk through that more, I guess. I think that this is the future discussion. The last thing, Mike, is in the settlement agreement, it didn't talk at all that I saw about the federal uncertainty that led to part of this decision process. And I think that that's something that should be in the settlement agreement if we get to that. Any particular reason why that wasn't included in the settlement agreement?
No particular reason.
So do you think that would be appropriate to put that discussion in there?
Both. I mean, we could write it into the settlement and sign it again. I don't think any of the parties would mind having that inserted in there.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Sure. Any further, Commissioner Kramer?
No, I was just thinking as you were testifying that maybe it would be better to always spell out certificate of need.
Commissioner Clark?
Thanks. Following up on Commissioner Clark's questions about untangling and trying to assign different costs for regulatory costs associated with different states, although that might be very difficult to do, does it make sense in future cases, perhaps ADP cases, for advocacy staff to perhaps, in either a qualitative or quantitative sense, try to figure out if it makes sense to build assets in certain states or that trigger certain mechanisms in different states because you may incur lots of uncertainty and costs that you wouldn't have as opposed to building it somewhere else?
Well, you can require whatever you wish.
Right, but I mean, taking it into consideration as a business risk as opposed when you're doing site selection, is that
sure.
Fair to do?
I think that's reasonable. I would also, I'll just leave it at that.
No. Okay. And just a kind of your professional opinion type question, since we'd asked about the different statutes at play here, the ADP one. The externality statute that bars the commission or utilities from quantifying costs that may come down the line. I mean, do you see that, especially with an ADP statute on the books, if you're going to have an ADP statute, as problematic from a staff standpoint, not being able to take some of those things into consideration?
I would think the size of these investments and the size of the projects, you don't want to go into any of these projects with blinders on. You want to look at the whole landscape. And so I would say that maybe the impact of that externality law is a little beyond what we wanted.
Okay. Thanks.
Any further questions from the commission?
Follow-up, Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Bring?
I just had a brief follow-up on the line of questioning of Commissioner Kalk related to allocation of costs related to the permits. Was it your understanding, Mr. Diller, that this generation unit was designed to serve three states?
Yes.
Was the generation interconnection or the transmission facilities that were required to integrate the generator, was that determined by the Midwest Independent System Operator? if you know.
Well, I know that there's a process there and that Otter Tail a lot of times does the work for MISO, but in the end, it's a MISO project, yes.
And if Otter Tail built a wind farm in North Dakota designed to serve its entire three-state footprint, do you think that the costs would be borne also for permits in the states of Minnesota and South Dakota?
I think those other states get a really good deal, and yes.
Thank you. No further questions.
Mr. Sabicol?
Nothing, Your Honor. Thank you.
Mr. Brett?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sackham?
Nothing. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Well, really, we have had some. Are there any further questions from the commission?
No.
If not, thank you very much, Mr. Dillon.
Thank you.
Let me ask if there is any member of the public here who is present to offer any comment or testimony. If not, let's proceed with closing. Mr. Brink.
Thank you, Your Honor and Commissioners. During the last 3 days of April 2008, Otter Tail Power Company made the case for an advanced determination of prudence for its proposed participation in Big Stone 2. This was a task Otter Tail had previously embarked on immediately before two companies withdrew from the project in September of 2007. During the April 2008 hearings, advocacy staff's expert, Terry Deason, a former Florida Public Utilities Commissioner and NARUC board member, essentially commended the companies for not choosing the easy course of action and for doing what they believed to be in the best interest of their customers. Ultimately, the commission issued an advanced determination of prudence on August 27, 2008. It was the correct decision. Over the course of time, however, events conspired against the Big Stone 2 project. Additional participants were daunted by the uncertainties associated with participation, primarily the regulatory requirements the project could have faced with new participants, and the wall of uncertainty relative to potential federal regulation of greenhouse gases. The inability to fill the void of losing two participants, the prospect of additional cost and ownership responsibility, the worst recession since the Great Depression, federal regulatory uncertainty, fundamental shifts in the energy marketplace, and protracted and uncertain permit appellate processes led Otter Tail to withdraw from the project. Withdrawal was an extraordinarily difficult course of action. And, Your Honor, the statement is particularly true for my colleagues and I who worked tirelessly for the project. And so I can say it with true conviction. But sometimes public utilities are forced to make difficult choices. This was not the time to commit to a capital expenditure on a generation resource whose projected cost approached Otter Tail's entire rate base. This was not the time to expose customers and shareholders to the uncertainty caused by the inability of Washington to chart a coherent course for national energy and climate policy. While we may wish that the final outcome had been otherwise, the policy objectives behind an advanced determination of prudence were achieved. Otter Tail and the Commission engaged in a deliberative process that will benefit customers in the final analysis and result in prudent solutions to the complex issue of meeting customer need. Otter Tail respectfully requests that the Commission issue an order approving the settlement agreement, finding Otter Tail's discontinuation of participation in Big Stone 2 prudent, and authorizing recovery of Big Stone 2 development costs from North Dakota ratepayers pursuant to the settlement agreement. Otter Tail further requests that the Commission find Otter Tail's petition for deferred accounting moot upon Commission approval of the settlement agreement. Thank you for your time and attention.
Mr. Sabicol.
Thank you, Your Honor. Commissioners, when the large industrial group got involved in this case, there were four primary issues that we were concerned with. Number one being the costs that are being sought, whether there's any redundancy, whether they timed their withdrawal correctly and didn't incur unnecessary costs. We believe there's been adequate review of that and are comfortable with the settlement with respect to that. Number two, rate design. We believe with any riders and or rate that is passed, that it should be consistent with sound rate-making policy. We think this settlement addresses that adequately. Next, with respect to whether we're seeking a rider recovery or rate-based recovery over time, our inclination getting into this case was that, you know, it shouldn't be a five-year recovery through rate base. It should be consistent with a coal facility, 25 years or longer, amortized over a much longer period of time. Through negotiations, we got convinced that a settlement in a rider treatment over a shorter period of time without a rate of return is acceptable and perhaps good, given what we've got on the horizon. Our calculations were that the present value savings was in excess of 12%, looking at how rate case recovery or rate-based recovery would actually occur. It's not a naturally depreciating asset and reducing rate of return asset. It would be lumpy. It'd be a rate case here, and they'd recover at that level, then it'd drop like rates do. So our calculations were that we're saving more than 12%. And then finally, something that we've addressed here in this case is the policy. We looked at, you know, certainly North Dakota has a strong law that entitles utilities to recovery, whether that's right or wrong in the long term. I don't know that we have a position, but I think we would have landed in the same spot on this case. I think as a policy perspective, us as ratepayers don't want utilities to be incented to take the easiest, shortest, highest return answer, which might be, in this case, renewables, which in the long term could cost ratepayers more, and is one of the reasons why we don't want a utility, whether by law or simply out of economic reasons, to be disincented from looking at all the baseload options. So that's why we arrived where we're at and are supportive of the settlement.
Mr. Brett.
Thank you, Your Honor, Commissioners. As you know, Dakota Resource Council didn't sign on to this settlement agreement, but as I stated earlier, we are in support of a determination that the project is no longer prudent, and I'd just like to address briefly, you know, why we didn't sign on. And we had some concerns about the costs and the numbers in the document, and I just want to make clear that my questions regarding checking invoices, the underlying documentation, I don't mean to insinuate in any way that there isn't a basis for the numbers being provided by Otter Tail. My questions really go to what is the methodology for determining these costs and what is the supporting documentation, because, you know, regardless of whether there's a decision that it's too cumbersome to, you know, address that in these proceedings, it's an issue that's likely to arise again. And I think it's important that there is an agreed upon methodology and a way to look at supporting documentation so that we know that when costs are being recovered, it's not just a matter of whether they're recovered, it's again a matter of from whom they're being recovered and whether North Dakota ratepayers are footing their fair share of the bill, Minnesota ratepayers are footing their fair share. And so my questions were really directed at that issue, and I think it's an important issue, you know, whether it's decided today or whether it's something going forward, there's something put in place to address that issue. The only other thing I want to mention, I think that, you know, from the beginning of these prudency proceedings, DRC's position has been clear, and Commissioner Kalk, you made reference a couple of times to opposition to environmental groups, and I just I point out that I'm not here as a policy advocate or a policy representative of these groups. I don't speak for them in their policy decisions and what their goals are. I speak for them on legal issues, and there's a big difference between the policy positions taken by these organizations and the legal positions. And the legal position taken by Dakota Resource Council here was that, you know, there's big question as to the constitutionality of a statute that tells the commissioners they can't look at information that is clearly pertinent and very important in their decision making. And, you know, we also question the interpretation of the law and stating that the law is telling you that. And so I believe our concern has been borne out here, and I just want to make clear again that, you know, it's not a policy issue necessarily in these proceedings. It's a legal position, and we share the commissioner's concerns with the externalities law and the interpretation and the impact it has on not allowing you to assess all of the information. No, thank you again.
Ms. Bendish.
I'm not sure at this point there's much to add other than staff has reviewed the information, they've thought long and hard about it, and they've come to a settlement agreement that they feel is just and reasonable for the ratepayers in North Dakota.
Do the commissioners have closing comments? Commissioner Kramer.
I would just say thank you and look forward to doing it again this afternoon with others and Mike.
Commissioner Clark.
Thanks as well.
Commissioner
Gawk. Thank you as well, and I'm hopeful that we can get this on, I guess it'd be the work session is the next thing, as quickly as possible. And I kind of made my points clear on a lot of things. That I think the settlement agreement is a good first step, but I personally have some things that need to be added in the settlement agreement for me. And there's some detailed work that needs to happen, but we need to put it as quickly as we can in our scheduling for all of us to get this resolved one way or the other. But thank you for all your work.
This hearing is closed, subject to the filing by Otter Tail Power Company of Exhibit 4, and subject to any party's motion to brief any question which is presented by the additional information provided by Exhibit 4. Let's expedite this, please. If there's a motion to be made, let's have it served by email. And let's assume that the motion shall also provide for a time in which the briefing will be filed. All right, so you say we wish to brief questions presented by the information, and that brief will be filed and served in 5 days, 10 days, whatever. And I would say 10 days should be a great plenty. Now, that's being said without any idea what questions may arise from that information, and in the circumstances. I think responsive briefs are appropriate, so let's have in mind if we can do 10 days, and not more than 10 days, barring cause, for the briefs, and 5 days for any responsive briefing. And I'll respond by email. We'll get that expedited in that manner. Council have any suggestions or questions about that?
I just have one question so that everybody's clear on it. The North Dakota Rules of Civil Procedure often allow a 3-day, you know, addition to the time period. No 3-day. Okay.
Not necessary with email, and I would hope the email doesn't come in on a Friday at 4 o'clock. Okay. Now, let's just do anything further for the record, Mr. Brady.
Your Honor, just one additional clarification. Am I to understand that the briefing would be required only if Dakota Resource Council files a motion?
Anybody files a motion.
All right.
Right. No. It's open. I would think, who knows? Not Otter Tail Power, certainly, but any other party. Anything further for the record, Mr. Bring?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Savicall, anything further for the record?
Nothing, Your Honor.
Mr.
Thank
Broughton.
You. No, Your Honor.
Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sack?
Proposed. Decisions, proposed findings.
I'm sorry, I just took that for granted.
Oh, no, you're closing the record, subject to, and you didn't mention it.
Well, I would assume that was assumed, counsel. Let's say that the party shall file proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, and let's close the hearing. We can excuse the commissioners. If we need to talk about time frames, let's do that now. Okay? So the record is closed. Counsel?
Is your intent a joint filing because
yes,
it is a joint settlement?
I can't imagine it's necessary in this circumstance. Certainly it's necessary to have be responsive of simultaneous filings. What? Mr. Bring, you're the moving party.
I would expect, yeah, Mr. Bring would take a first crack at it, so I'd defer to him.
Your Honor, I think that we could accomplish that within, 10 business days or something. I would think that's reasonable.
Well, that seems more than reasonable to me, but is that agreeable, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So,
Your Honor, we would do it sooner if we're able to.
Okay. That's it. Thank you.